Listening Library presents Carnival Magic by Amy Efron. Read for you by Lorraine Newman. For Maya, Anna, and Ethan, whose love and imagination inspire me every day. Chapter 1. The Cottage at Devon by the Sea.
I'll take the attic, said Tess,
tearing up the third flight of stairs before Max even had a chance to fully understand the question.
It's a 3-bedroom house, Aunt Evie had said when they walked in the door. 4 if you count the attic. So, since your parents are coming in a few days, one of us has to take the attic, and I don't think it's going to be me.
It's mine, said Tess emphatically.
She thought an attic bedroom was possibly a charming idea. A little scary, but in a good way. It also occurred to her that her brother Max might be a little scared if he slept up there, even though he wouldn't want to admit it. So she instantly claimed it. Tess hesitated on the landing at the top of the stairs. She held her breath as she popped the door open, frightened it might be dusty, musty, or dotted with spiders. But the room was flooded with sunlight from a triangular window that looked out onto the sea. It was a small room, well, tiny, but blue and white striped wallpaper lined two of the walls, and the wall with the window was painted white, so that it was almost cheerful. There was a double bed covered with a down quilt and big white pillows. The ceiling sloped down a bit like a triangle toward the window, so she figured she had to be careful getting out of bed on the right side.
Note to self. Remember to always get up on the left side of the bed so as not to bump your head.
Tess could hear the sound of the ocean lapping softly against the shore. And even inside, the air was fresh, a tiny bit salty and moist from the sea. It occurred to Tess that she was really going to like Devon by the Sea, on top of that strange thing that had already happened that she didn't think she could tell Aunt Evie about. Chapter 2. A plane, a train, a car ride, and a trip to the zoo. Here's what had already happened. Their mom, Abby, had taken them to the international terminal at JFK Airport. They checked in with the help of a very nice porter, who told them, after he helped carry their bags to the counter, that he hoped they had an excellent adventure. Tess hoped they had an excellent adventure, too. Their mother then escorted them as far as she could to the security line. Tess dropped her backpack. She hugged her mother and gave her a kiss on both cheeks, since, after all, they were going to Europe, and kissing people on both cheeks was the custom there. Max just nodded when his mom smooshed his hair on the top of his head, which was a funny way she had sometimes of sending him off to school in the morning. But then he dropped his backpack, too, and gave her a hug and a kiss on the cheek. Then, Tess and Max were on their own. They waited patiently in line for their turn to go through the metal detector. Max went first, then Tess. For reasons Tess couldn't understand, when she walked through the metal detector, there was suddenly a very large noise as the alarm went off. She turned around. She was certain she couldn't have done that. But everyone at the checkpoint was looking at her. The TSA officer, who wasn't nearly as nice as the porter, directed her, as if it was a command, to walk back through the machine.
It must be my cap, said Tess instantly, realizing she'd forgotten to take her olive green baseball cap off.
It didn't have any lettering on it at all, no advertising. Didn't draw any attention to itself, just kept the sun off, which is what Tess thought was the perfect thing for a cap. She gently placed it on the conveyor belt.
Are you wearing a belt? The TSA officer asked her.
Nope.
She shook her head, then wondered if nope was the right thing to say to a TSA officer.
Is your cell phone in your pocket?
No,
she answered.
Do you have any keys?
He asked her.
Oh, she said. She was frightened he was going to take it away from her. She pulled an old-fashioned skeleton key out of her front jeans pocket. Of course, it's the key to my aunt's house in London, she said. This was the first lie Tess had told in a long time, but she knew she couldn't tell him what it was, really. She was frightened he might ask to see it. It was the key to the gate at the castle next door to her aunt's house in Hampshire. The key to her friend William's garden. But that seemed way too hard to explain. When Tess was packing, she'd heard William's voice so clearly as if he was standing next to her, saying the last thing he'd said to her last summer. Keep the key, he'd said. You never know when you might need it. Tess thought it was opportune of her to take the skeleton key with her to England. That was a word their dad used, opportune. It implied it might be useful later. And Tess thought that might actually be the case, because in her experience, you never knew what could happen in England. We need it, she said to the TSA officer, her voice pitching up a little bit when she said it. Her brother Max chimed in from the other side of the checkpoint. We do. Aunt Evie said we should bring it. Max was lying, too. The TSA officer hesitated for a moment. It felt like a long moment to Tess. All right, then, he said finally, without asking to see it. She'd been so frightened he would ask to see it. She never was quite sure what the key was going to do if she handed it to someone else. She remembered what had happened when Max had found it by mistake last summer, and it had turned bright red and burned his hand. Is this your backpack? He asked. The TSA officer pointed to a kid-sized version of a military green backpack, sitting alone at the end of the conveyor belt that in fact belonged to Tess. Do you think you could put that key in your luggage where it belongs? Yes, sir, she said. He handed it back, around the X-ray machine, and watched while she unzipped the side pocket, carefully dropped the key in, and zipped the pocket back up. She realized she'd been holding her breath. She had been so frightened that he might confiscate it. Another one of those grown-up words that meant, take it away. She set the backpack on the conveyor belt and watched it slide again into the metal tunnel, where a picture could be viewed. Then she stepped back through the metal detector, and thankfully neither she or the backpack set off any further alarms. Almost the second the plane leveled out at flying altitude, Max fell asleep. Tess wrote a story in her notebook about a little girl who falls asleep on a train and misses her stop, rides past it, and ends up in another town. That was as far as she got. And then she fell asleep, too. Tess and Max woke up almost at the same moment somewhere over the Atlantic. Their mom's best friend, Franny, had packed them sandwiches from the fancy delicatessen so that they wouldn't have to eat the food on the plane, which she said was full of preservatives. Their mom had slipped in some chocolate chip cookies after Franny left. They were from the bakery on the corner, but they weren't sure Franny believed in sugar either. Tess and Max were both surprised how quickly the pilot announced that they were about to land at Heathrow Airport. They put their seat backs up, and Max raised the window shade, which was especially startling as the sun was just beginning to rise. The clouds were stunningly tinged with gold, blue, red, and purple rays, like a painting. And the outline of London looked like a toy city, with its pitched roofs, cobblestone streets, and church steeples covered in a cloud of mist. Aunt Evie was waiting for them at the airport. Tess heard her voice before she saw her.
Yoo-hoo!
Her voice rang out clearly through the crowd. Aunt Evie had lightened her hair. She also had a new haircut. The front was layered a bit and fell beautifully around her face and down her shoulders. And she was wearing a bit of makeup and what looked to Tess
Sample complete. Ready to continue?